C4. Number 13A.
All right. We come to the fourth chapter, Christian Science versus Spiritualism. And this chapter is always the nut to crack. I always feel that if I get over this chapter, I have done it. It is the chapter that most Christian Scientists don't read because they feel, well, I'm not interested in Spiritism, so why should I read it? I anyway don't believe in Spiritism, so I'm not interested. But the chapter really is called Christian Science versus Spiritualism, not Spiritism. And Spiritualism means much more than just the belief of Spiritism. It is a much larger belief, and it is naturally the counterfeit of Spirit. Therefore, we will not be surprised that if you read the chapter through very quickly and feel that it has a complete different subject than the preceding chapters, and you are constantly confronted in that chapter with the synonymous term spirit, 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 it's all over the place, spirit. And so we would feel that here Mrs. Eddy takes up really the question of spirit as the real, as the only, because up to now she's somehow left it open if the spiritual is the only, or if the spiritual is only the bigger, that which is above matter, therefore more important than matter. But actually up to now she has never said that spirit is the only and that matter is nothing. We are perhaps quite surprised at that up to now she has said that we should get away from matter and look towards spirit, as if both would exist. If we turn away from matter, as she has said in the second chapter, turn away from matter to the imperishable things of spirit, well, she leaves the sense that both are real, that both are there. But you can choose between both, and you better choose the spiritual than the material. Up to that page 70, when she starts with the chapter on spiritualism, the reader has not yet been instructed that spirit is the only. Only this chapter begins now to teach us about the onlyness of spirit, and therefore that spiritualism is wrong. So the general tone that runs right through the whole chapter, which is actually the overall tone, is always spirit. No matter which subtone and sub-subtone we are studying, we should always keep in our mental ear the tone that what she now wants to show is that spirit is the only, that spirit is the real, therefore that matter is nothing. Here we are instructed that there is but one infinite spirit, not just spirit, but one infinite spirit which excludes the possibility of anything that is unlike spirit. Here, spirit is depicted as being omnipotent and omnipresent, and we get the sense now she clears the whole field and say, look here, actually the problem is that you must see that spirit is the real and only. That spirit has no opposite. Up to this point, the reader was not instructed that there is not an opposite. That's quite interesting to see. But you can read those three chapters, the first three chapters, through, and you can see that she always leaves a sense of dualism, as if the material and the human would be something, that the material can be overcome by the spiritual, that the human can be overcome by the divine, but somehow still leaving the impression both are here. The spiritual is more powerful, is bigger than the other, but still there is a sense of duality lingering, so to say, within the text. At this point, she takes up the question of the onlyness of spirit against any sense of dualism. And that sense of dualism she calls spiritualism. What is spiritualism? If in our terminology we could say spiritualism is really the belief that both spirit and matter are real. That's spiritualism. Or the belief that spirit mingles with matter. That's spiritualism. So whenever we think that spirit needs matter to manifest itself, that spirit needs matter to communicate itself, like through a person or through the spoken word, we believe in spiritualism. That spirit needs matter to interpret itself. That's spiritualism. And suddenly we realize that spiritualism is a much bigger belief than we would have thought up to now, perhaps, that it is something in which we more or less all believe from morning to night. We believe that spirit can only communicate itself through matter. That's why one goes to a class and to a teacher, because he communicates the spirit through his presentation, through the spoken word or through the written word, where spirit doesn't need that channel. Spirit only needs spirit to communicate itself. Spirit is the only, doesn't need an opposite nature to communicate itself. Can you see how much we believe in spiritualism? We believe that spirit, in order to be real and therefore tangible to consciousness, must be in matter and work through matter, must penetrate matter. But the moment spirit penetrates matter, you have sensation in matter. Therefore, sensation in matter again is a belief in spiritualism. Spiritualism is the belief that matter is finite, limited. So whenever we feel that spirit is not everywhere and therefore does not communicate everywhere, does not manifest itself everywhere, we believe in spiritualism. For instance, you believe in spiritualism if you believe that God is good, but that your present situation is very bad. Then you believe that the good is outside of you, therefore the good is limited, not with you. That's spiritualism. Every limitation of good is spiritualism. Every limitation is spiritualism, because it makes the infinite finite. Or if we believe that spirit can improve matter or a material state, that's again spiritualism. If we believe we have a material state that is not good and that through application of spirit we can improve it, this is spiritualism. Because for spirit there is no improvement. For spirit there is no material state. For spirit there is only the spiritual that is real, and that's always complete. We believe in spiritualism when we try to see spirit in matter, therefore materialize spirit, or if we spiritualize matter. These are the most common aspect of spiritualism, that we feel here we have a material universe and actually we should see it as spiritual. Then we try to spiritualize matter and see matter as being the creation of spirit. This is the belief of most religions, like theosophy, Eastern philosophy, and many of the modern metaphysical trends, if I may call them that way. They all believe that matter is a form of spirit. that it is spirit that is consolidated or spirit that has taken on an intense form. They all try to see matter as spirit, as spirit. So they materialize spirit. Or, on the other side, spiritualize matter. Spiritualism believes that spirit can have a corporeal quality, namely the spirits. Spirits that are not physically tangible still have a corporeal form. They appear as a corporeal form. In the spiritualistic seances, the spirits of the departed appear as voice, limited, appear as a form, limited, appear as writing on a paper, it's limited. Everything that has to do with spiritism, again, believes that spirit has a finite form. And it is really this concept that we have to see through and see that whatever is spirit is infinite. Just infinite. Can never be captured, so to say, in any finite form. In any finite form. So if we want to be in contact, in communion with spirit, we shouldn't try to be in contact with a corporeal spirit, a personal spirit, as the spiritists do. Mrs. Eddy even calls that side of spiritualism which has a material conception, like the material spiritualism, she calls gross materialism. For her, matter is not such a gross thing as material spiritualism. Because, after all, if you have matter as matter, you only have a few material objects. But if you materialize even that which is spiritual, you have even more material things and material forms to deal with, so it becomes grosser and grosser. What is spiritism? Spiritism is only one aspect of spiritualism. It is that aspect of spiritualism which tries to divide the one infinite spirit into many spirits and calls them spirits, personal spirits, corporeal spirits. In spiritism, you have to have a limitation in communication. You have mediums, personal mediums, through which it can communicate. These poor spirits cannot communicate except they find somewhere a channel, a medium, through which to communicate. Whereas the infinite spirit communicates all over the world to everybody in its fullness. Yes. So, I have established first the great overall tone of this chapter, that there is only one spirit, the infinite spirit, and that spirit cannot be limited in any way. Another aspect that is quite outstanding here is that for the first time Mrs. Eddy explains evil as nothing. And she explains that on the basis that spirit is the only. She says on page 71, she says, nothing is real and eternal, - nothing is spirit. You see, nothing is spirit, spirit as the real and eternal, but God and his idea, evil has no reality. The moment she has stated idea and has shown that all that there exists is idea, and this is the first time in her textbook that she speaks about idea as the reality. Isn't it amazing? I'm quite sure that if I had asked you before I started and said, where does Mrs. Eddy speak about idea, and that ideas are real, and that ideas are eternal, and that all there is about reality is idea, where does she say that? And you would have said, well, all over the place. But actually, she doesn't say that in the first three chapters. Only at the beginning of the fourth chapter, so to say, she lets the cat out of the sack, huh? And says, you know, all that is real is actually only idea. Up to now, you were believing, so to say, in the material universe and the spiritual universe, and we're seeing that you can be one with the spiritual next to the material universe, and you know that the spiritual is bigger than the material, and that the spiritual is supreme over the material, as if there would be a material. Now she comes and says, okay, the only thing that does exist is spirit. Matter does not exist. Evil does not exist. All that exists are God and His idea. And I think one should see that in order to be aware of how to speak with patients, with newcomers, with people, that one doesn't throw the statements of the fourth chapter at their head unprepared, but that one should rather start where the textbook starts and say, I tell them something about Christian Science from the point of view of prayer, and perhaps afterwards they can swallow a little bit of what the textbook says about atonement and Eucharist, that the higher rules the lower, and something about marriage, that they will understand and that they will love. And only then, little by little, tell them what really is, that only the spiritual is real. Just as she has done. You know, try sometimes, if you are faced with a big question, a fundamental question, not a specific one, fundamental questions, like, for instance, the question of evil I have touched. Go through the textbook and see how such a question is really tackled in the textbook. You will be always surprised and happily surprised to see that all these questions she will deal with in a different way in each chapter. Absolutely different. Never repeating herself. See what I was quoting from those theologians on the first or second day, that they say that Mrs. Eddy always meditates in circles, always repeats themselves and turns in circles, is not true at all. It's just that they don't have that sensorium, that fine sense of being able to read with the language of spirit. They only read with the English language, but not with the language of spirit. Or they would see how all these big questions are answered in one chapter in one way and never repeat themselves in the other chapters. And furthermore, that if we consider how she answers this question from chapter to chapter in a chronological way, that we would see a very constructive and logical sense of how to deal this question. I will give you a few examples right away. So that we begin to realize more and more something, that an atomistic definition is never good. That sense where we feel that we should answer a question like, what is evil? The question, what is matter? With one sentence, with one statement, is not sufficient. It's an atomistic answer, it's not structured. But today we have seen we should be structural scientists, and therefore give a structural answer. And a structural answer we can always give best with a matrix, because a matrix is the representation of a structure. For instance, look at this here. In this fourth chapter, she says, for the first time, evil is nothing. Evil has no reality. It is nothing, it is an illusion. What did she say then about evil in the other chapters before? Or in other words, if somebody asks us, and we are always asked, what is evil? This is a great question that the biggest scientists, even the physicists today, ask and philosophize about it. Anyway, I know it over in Europe, and I think it's here too. What is evil? What is that evil power? You see, they are interested in that because they are investigating power, and suddenly it's seen, what is evil? What is evil power? They investigate that now. And if we are asked, what is evil? We say, oh, in Christian Science, evil is nothing. See, it's just nothing. You know, there is no evil. Does Mrs. Eddy answer the question that way? No. In the first chapter, you can look up all the references in the first chapter, and the main tone is that in the first chapter, whenever she speaks about evil, she gives the indication we should deliver ourselves from evil. Deliver, what is it? Deliver us from evil. Hmm? Well, it means evil exists. Hmm? We have to deliver ourselves from evil. She doesn't say evil exists, huh? But the reader still thinks there is evil. Hmm? He goes out from where he is, but Mrs. Eddy lifts him a little bit up and says, you should get rid of evil. Deliver yourself from evil. When you come to the second chapter, she's already stronger. You already hear the Christ tone in it, the Christ command in it, and says, cast out evil. Constantly comes in that command to cast out evil. When she comes to the third chapter, marriage, then she says that the good, now she comes in with the good, should have ascendancy over evil, as if evil would exist. But, she says, the good is bigger and should have ascendancy, so that the good has more room within your consciousness and the evil should have less and less room in your consciousness, you see? So that we are still, all through the first three chapters in the belief, there are two things, evil and good. That we should be delivering ourselves from evil, that we should cast it out, and how can we cast out? By putting more weight on good. And only in the fourth chapter now she says that nothing is real and eternal, nothing is spirit, but God and his idea, therefore evil is nothing. For the first time. Yeah, or take the proposition of matter, because as we are here now in spiritualism, and they have to do with spirit as the only real, for the first time she says that matter is unreal. Would you have believed it, that 70 pages along she doesn't say that matter is unreal, and should treat it as unreal? Isn't it amazing? I would have said, before I investigated, I would have thought, well, when she comes to the question of matter, she must say that matter is nothing. No? When she deals with the question of matter in prayer, she only postulates that matter is the antipode of spirit, the opposite of spirit. So to say, even postulating duality, says, here you are spirit, and the antipode of it is matter. But when she comes to Atonement and Eucharist, then she says, Christ's command, turn away from matter and turn towards the imperishable things of spirit. Well, we can only turn from something if it is something. Or at least if we still feel there is something and we turn away. So the reader still, she leaves the reader still in the belief that matter is something, and ask him to turn away from it and turn to the spiritual. When we come to marriage, then she deals with matter again in a different way and says, for heaven's sake, don't always give more and more attributes to matter. Don't attribute intelligence to matter. Don't attribute anything to matter. As if matter were something and we could put more attributes to matter. Says, don't do that. Can you see, still the belief of duality? And when it comes to the fourth chapter, then she says, really, that matter is unreal, that it is only an illusion of mortal sense. For spirit, She says there is no matter, only in the fourth chapter. Yes. Yeah. Again, if we take idea, I like to do these things, you know. I like to take power and idea and evil and matter and all these big metaphysical questions and just try to trace them through the chapters. And that gives us a structured answer to these big questions. To see that this big concept idea, which we feel is all over the place in her teaching, that their teaching is about idea, that the first chapter doesn't mention idea, the third chapter doesn't mention idea, only the second chapter mentions idea in a casual way, and not in the way that what exists is idea, there she only speaks about the idea of God. But in the fourth chapter, she says, all that there exists is actually God and his idea. That there is nothing else that exists but idea. That's the first time she says it. And in this way, when you make these comparisons, you find out much clearer what is the place value of a chapter, like this fourth chapter, where we feel, here for the first time she says, spirit is the only, spirit is the real, matter is unreal, evil is unreal. See, all that there is in reality, is idea. Then you get already a terrific concept of what is under discussion here.